Hello, I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech language pathologist, and welcome to Teach Me to Talk, the podcast. Today, we're continuing our summer speech intelligibility series for toddlers, and we're going to be talking about pattern 2 and pattern 3 of the 6 priority patterns that we treat when we have highly unintelligible toddlers. Now, you can go back and listen to the first pattern in show 377, but actually this is show number 6 in this series, and today we're going to be talking about the second pattern, vowels, and the third pattern, initial consonant sounds. So let's just move forward and talk about this. Now, when do we work on vowels with toddlers? Well, let me give you some criteria for that. First of all, when children are not using a variety of vowel sounds in words, their speech is really hard to understand. Let's say they only have one vowel that they use, and usually it's a really neutral vowel like and then every word sounds like that. Cookie might be and then bubble is and then ball is and dada is da-da, and so it just, and mama is mama, and so it's really, really confusing. And so without a lot of contextual cues, it's hard to make out what a child is trying to tell you. So when children don't use a variety of vowel sounds, we certainly need to work on this. And the same other criteria that I give, and all of this information is from my therapy manual, Functional Phonology, and you can find out more information about this in the post below. But lots of times, and I've already given this example, when children's speech, when you just cannot understand what they are saying and lots of their words sound the same, vowels are usually the problem. And parents don't always identify it as that. They'll just say they're hard to understand, or I can never make out what they're saying. Lots of their words sound the same. So listen for those heads-up cues that parents are giving you about that. Toddlers do not need to work on vowels to improve their speech intelligibility when they are already using more than 3 to 4 different vowel sounds in words, or when you can readily pick out, hey, vowels are not the problem. This is a problem with consonants, or this is a problem with syllableness, or whatever maybe one of the other patterns are. So this is a really important pattern, and as I said back in the previous show in 377, when I went to grad school, we did not focus very much on vowels. We learned a lot about learning how to remediate or provide intervention for and teach children how to correctly produce consonant sounds, but the information on vowels is really limited. Now, I know that grad schools are doing a better job of that now, but lots of times for we as speech language pathologists, we have to go out and get additional training on our own. And so that's what this show is about. But let me just say too, it's a really introductory level because the podcasts are here now on YouTube. And so I try so hard to walk that narrow line between what's applicable for parents as well as professionals. So if you don't have a good background in vowels, and if you feel like, boy, this is really an area that I need to improve my practice, let me encourage you to view this information as an introduction, a place for you to start, but you may need to go on and get some more in-depth training. And Pamela Marshalla has a fantastic course that's still on CD. It's called Vowel Tracks, and I highly recommend that for any therapist who wants to improve their clinical skill set and improve your foundational knowledge of you working on vowels, especially with toddlers. All right, so back to toddlers here. Children with typically developing speech use most vowels correctly by age 2, and nearly all vowels should be mastered by age 3. So if you are working with a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old who has lots of vowel errors, it is certainly something that we should be focused on as one of our therapy goals. And remember that vowels are a really important component for speech intelligibility. As we talked about in the last show when we were talking about syllableness, vowels actually create a word's syllables. And again, it's the most basic unit of a word. And don't forget about that vowels also tend to vary with how we pronounce them from region to region, certainly country to country, but even within a country like the United States, vowels are what let you know that I'm from the Deep South. And if I listen to you, if you're from the Northeast, I could probably pick that out by listening to your vowel sounds. And certainly we all, the West, the North, we all sound different because those are our dialects or those regional variations. So don't let that throw you if you are listening to me and thinking, what in the world, how can she talk about vowels when she sounds like that? Oh, people in the South sound like me and use my same vowel set. So again, just wanted to talk about those regional differences there. Now, children who only use a few vowel sounds are often the most difficult children to understand, and children with markers for childhood apraxia of speech have the most difficulty with vowel sounds. Kids with dysarthria, vowels may still be intact, and remember now, dysarthria is a neuromuscular condition, and it usually is accompanied by a medical diagnosis that as a parent you already know about, or as a therapist the child is usually already identified as having some muscle tone differences, either high muscle tone where the muscles are rigid, or lower muscle tone where the muscles are weaker or floppier, kind of to use an everyday term there. So vowels, even with dysarthria, are usually more intact than they are in children with apraxia. And even in kids with phonological disorders, the vowels usually are not as disrupted as consonant sounds would be. And so apraxic kids or kids with apraxia have the most difficulty with vowels. And if kids are just having a speech delay, just that their speech sound systems are slower to mature, their vowels are still going to be mostly correct, especially when you compare them with a child with markers for motor planning disorders, as would be apraxia. So there, we usually think about vowels as being A, E, I, O, U, and sometimes Y, if you think back to learning to read in elementary school, but there are actually many, 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 many more vowel sounds than that. I've got a list, a good list in Functional Phonology on page 84, if you already have that book, but you could really just Google any kind of list and look at a phonetic list of vowels if you're a parent and you're really interested in this. And want to see just a complete list of this. There are front, and we usually classify this as speech language pathologist by where the vowel is produced in the mouth. So front vowels, central vowels, back vowels, and then diphthongs. And remember, diphthongs are when we combine two vowels in a word like cow or a word like boy. And I'm trying to exaggerate that here so that you can see you start in one position in your mouth and slide to another position. So we're going to be talking about correcting vowel sounds, again, at the most basic level, because we are dealing with toddlers and just, again, our youngest little clients. And here, let me just say, we are not going for perfection. We're just talking about moving closer or approximating the vowel, because that will go a long way toward helping a child be easier to understand and improving overall speech intelligibility. And it, let me just say too, for parents, this may be a lot more technical than you even want to think about. And as I said in the last show, I've just really highly recommend that you work with a speech language pathologist who works with toddlers and young preschoolers and is well versed in techniques that work for them. Vowels are much more abstract or more difficult for us to correct or even move toward a closer approximation for, even as speech language pathologists. So if you're a parent and you feel like, gosh, that's just a little bit beyond what I'm comfortable doing, just think about it in terms of, I want to help my child move to a closer vowel sound, or I want to get this word closer so that people can understand what he or she is trying to say. So let's just start out with some initial treatment tips for vowels. And after the last show about syllableness, after listening to that show and thinking about it, I thought I probably should have started, instead of with the treatment tips, I should have given you those word lists. And I want to do that now. Now, if you are paying for continuing education credit for this, if you're a therapist, this list will be in your handout for the course. And it's just $5 for CE credit. So, again, if you're a parent and you're thinking, I wish I had this access to the written information, it might be worth it to you to go ahead and pay for the course so that you can get the handout that accompanies the course. But we're really primarily going to be talking about five vowel sounds today, a long E, an oo, an ah, an o, and an And so the target words for that, let me just read through this. And again, if you want to get the written copy of this, with E, our target words are eat, we, me, be, and pee. And again, these are all in facilitative context, meaning that we're taking where the vowel is produced in the mouth and we're pairing it with a consonant that's produced at the same position in the mouth, because theoretically and practically, that should be easier for a child to produce and get the correct vowel when we pair it with a consonant, again, that's made at that same place. So our target words for oo, and again, if you're a parent, think about that like a sound of displeasure, like oo. So that's what we're going for. So our target words here are to, boo, and poo or poo-poo, which again, potty words are very popular with toddlers and young preschoolers who are learning how to toilet train. The next vowel we'll be talking about today, and again, remember it's a developmental model, so these are the vowels that occur earliest, and these are the easiest ones to kind of target when we're looking at making the most impact with speech intelligibility. The next one is an ah. So all done, hot, and mama are our target words there. Oh, our target words are open, no, go, a little phrase here, oh no, Elmo, and bow. And then the last vowel we'll be talking about is just that neutral for puppy, up, yucky, and one. So those are our target words. So I want you to think about those words as I am moving through this list of initial strategies to try with toddlers. Now, sometimes the strategies kind of overlap with activities. And again, if you want that written version of this, if this is too fast, get the book, because you'll be able to get those lists and refer to it over and over and over. And if I haven't said this on my show or on this show, I know I've said it on previous shows, these aren't my original ideas. This is all evidence-based practice. So it's pulled from the research that teaches us about speech sound development in early language or early speech language development, and also other researchers who've done lots of work with phonological development or phonological processes. Phonological processes are the patterns that we use and that all babies and toddlers and preschoolers learn as they learn to talk and then move toward adult-like speech. And so some errors are natural. Lots of errors are natural. And all children, even children with typically developing speech-language skills, make these same kinds of errors. But then as they mature and as their development progresses, they start to sound more and more like an adult, because those phonological processes have evolved. They've moved toward more adult-like speech. And so that's what we're going to be talking about today too. And I want you to know, especially if you're a parent listening, that this isn't just my idea, this speech pathologist from Kentucky. It's rooted in science. So you can get more information about that too by looking at Teach Me to Talk and looking at the resources for this particular show. All right, so what do we do first? Well, first, when we're working on vowels, we start with words on that first list that I gave you, because again, remember, those are theoretically easier words for children to produce. And I'm not even sure I said this before, but I know I said it in the last show when we about syllableness, and we were talking about types of errors. We can have speech language pathologists classify errors by severity or by significance. And when a child completely omits or deletes a sound, that's a more serious error than when a child substitutes another sound for that. So if you have a child who's using lots of consonant sounds to represent a word, so let's say instead of cup, he's just coming to you and saying k, or pop. When you pop a bubble, he's just saying p. That is a really big deal. And again, it's usually a marker, or possibly, very possibly, a marker for a toddler who has suspected childhood apraxia of speech. Because otherwise, as we've already talked about, the other diagnoses that cause or are that a child usually gets the label for, dysarthria, phonological disorder, or speech delay, kids with those three diagnoses typically do not have difficulty with vowels. So even when we see a child who's substituting vowels, it's a much less serious problem than a kid who uses very little vowels at all. So I hope that makes sense to you. And I have run into kids like that over the course of my career. They're really light talkers, so we don't hear anything. I mean, it is really hard to get a word approximation. And then when they do start to talk, it's just in these isolated little consonants. And that's so confusing for parents. I mean, they just think, what in the world is this? And it's so confusing for SLPs too, because that's pretty rare when that happens. You know, I have seen it because of the population that I work with really specializing in toddlers. And a lot of times, especially when I was seeing kids from all over the country, I got the hardest kids. They came to me, people that had other people just kind of shaking their heads or shrugging their shoulders. And so when we hear these vowel errors or have a kid with that, it's pretty significant. So I wanted to talk about that as well. Okay, so how do we fix them? Well, we treat them. We start with words on the first easiest, earliest list, and again, I read those to you, or you can get those in the handout or in my treatment manual. And here are the things we do with those words. First of all, we're going to exaggerate and emphasize the vowel sounds in words. And again, I've already made a joke about me being from the South, and because I work with little kids, I tend to elongate my vowels anyway, and my personality kind of leans toward overly dramatic all the time. So it's not hard for me to think about using this first strategy. And if you'll think about also using a sing-song, melodic way of speaking, and SLPs call this prosody, or the melody of speech, that also is a really great first strategy that anyone can implement, no matter whether you're a parent or a therapist. So just really modeling exaggerated, elongated vowels. And so instead of saying cookie, do you want a cookie? You would say cookie. Oh, I have a cookie. And some parents are quite natural at this, and they are fine to do that, but some parents really have to work, and they think that this sounds very childlike or, again, dramatic, and that's not a strategy that they are going to just wholeheartedly embrace, but it really does work, and especially when we have toddlers who are really consistent imitators, and we didn't talk about this on this show, but it is nearly impossible to work on speech intelligibility with a toddler who is an infrequent imitator, because it's super, super inefficient, first of all, if you're trying to really correct or help him move toward a closer approximation of the word. You've got to hear him say it. And if you are spending more than a minute trying to get an attempt at the word, then you're working on the wrong kinds of goals. You really should not be focused on speech intelligibility. You should just be working on imitation, just getting anything. And again, working on language. And kids like that, again, need that kind of focus from you. And so for you to then layer, not only does that kid have to talk, but then he also has to get the sound right. That's too hard. That's too much pressure for a toddler. So no wonder you may be getting resistance as you try to work with a little friend like that. And if you're a parent, let me just say, you're also working on the wrong thing and focusing on the wrong thing. With those kinds of kids who are infrequent imitators, your focus is just to keep them engaged with you and to keep them wanting to play with you, keep them interacting socially, and then to keep them really, really learning how to imitate at an earlier, easier level. So for those kids, you're probably going to back up and not be worried about them saying anything. You just want them noisy. Or for the kids who have a hard time staying with you, you just want them imitating the actions that you're doing with play. And so again, if you've just discovered this show and this is the first time you've listened to a podcast of mine, or you're new to my email list and you got this little link about with this video and you're not quite sure what's going on, there are other starting points for children. And if you are struggling to get your child to repeat or imitate anything you say, this is going to be way too hard and well above. So what do you have to do? You need to back up with those kids and work on the things that I just talked about. And so for those kids, again, take a look at some other resources that I have at Teach Me to Talk. Again, Building Verbal Imitation in Toddlers. That book will walk you through teaching a child how to imitate. If it's a problem with the kid staying with you, that you start all this and then he's just gone, you may have to work on social engagement first. So Teach Me to Play with You, it's your better resource for that. And I'll try to link that in the post below. I didn't originally plan on talking about those things, but I just started thinking, if you are watching this without any prior knowledge, and if you were hearing me say work on vowels, and then you have a kid who can't imitate at all, it's not the correct starting point for you. So I wanted to make that point. All right, so back to our strategies here. Exaggerate and emphasize the vowel sounds in words. And I said this to a mom and dad that I worked with on Friday. A lot of times we emphasize the consonant when we're trying to get a child to imitate a word. And for that little guy, that's appropriate. I think we were trying to get him to say car. He's a great signer, but he's got a real, he has about 20 words. So we're coming along, but we need some more words. And so we were trying to get him to pair. He's learned some signs, super, super progress with that. But I was trying to get him to say car. And so I was really cueing, you know, your throaty sound, which we'll talk about initial consonants in a minute. And then as I'm sitting there, I hear my own voice come down and say, Laura, you're supposed to be really emphasizing the vowel sound. And this little guy he has some problems with vowels, but a lot more problems with consonants. My point here is, anytime that we're struggling with getting a kid to imitate, don't always stick to trying to emphasize the consonant. Try the vowel, because for lots of kids, that switch alone, instead of going, listen, car, car, when I'm saying car, car, I'm probably going to get more of an attempt than if I were just sticking with that consonant. So little tip there. Do as I say, not as I do, right? Okay, back to the second strategy. Here, and this is my very favorite one. So beyond the exaggerating and elongating, which we want everybody doing, and again, you need to talk to parents about that if you're a therapist, and saying, look, he's got a lot of vowel errors. The very first thing, the most important thing that I want you to do is, when you are playing with him and in his daily routines, emphasize all his vowels. So in the bathtub, you're saying water. When you're cooking and you're ready to have a meal, you're saying, let's eat. Come on, it's time to eat. And so you're really hitting those vowel sounds in your target words. Beyond that, the next recommendation is to target new words or vocabulary that begin with vowel sounds. And when your target is at the beginning position of the word, it automatically elevates its importance there. It's much more noticeable. So my favorite kinds of words for this goal for working on vowels are prepositions. So location words. So words like up, in, out, on, off, and under. And again, you're also targeting a child's language skills or improving his vocabulary, especially if he doesn't use these prepositions spontaneously yet. Now, before you really get a kid saying a lot of these words, you need to be sure that he understands it. And so many times we rush ahead in speech therapy or with a parent who is a child, their child is a late talker, and we're thinking about, again, a goal that's way ahead of where we need to be. So before you start to work on these kinds of words with the child and use these as your target words to improve vowels, I hope that you've really considered whether or not he can understand any target word, but especially these location verbs, these prepositions. So how do you know? Well, does he follow directions that specifically include these words? And you do some little testing, some probing. So you might have a ball and, say, a laundry basket there. And so you'll say, oh, we're going to play ball. Let's do some things with this ball. Oh, look, it's my turn. I put ball in. And so then he's standing there and you say, just start. You know, you get the ball out and then flip the basket over and say, let's put the ball on. Now let's take the ball off. Now some of this you've got to be careful about, because if a ball is in the basket, what will a child naturally do? He naturally wants to take it out. So you've got to be a little bit objective about it and make sure that your directions aren't something that he would do already on his own. But think about how you can do this. Even at a meal, you could have a kid with a spoon and have a cup there. And you could say, show mama how to put your spoon in. You put your spoon in and see if he'll do that. And just really probe these kinds of words, because you do want to make sure that children understand words before we expect them to say these words. So don't forget that important prerequisite here. And so prepositions are a super, super starting point when you are looking at what other kinds of words can I target with these vowels. And some of those prepositions were on that early word list, like up is on that list, but actually in, out, on, and off aren't on those lists, so they are not the easiest words that you could say. But I've had great luck with that, because they're meaningful for kids and because you can do a ton of activities with those. I mean, you can hide a baby doll in different places. If a kid loves trains, you can hide the train in different places, and you can have him, you know, think about playing some version of Simon Says with that. And sometimes that's hard to get it going with a 2-year-old, because they want to be in charge of everything. They don't necessarily want to tell you what to do. But you can sort of modify that and really play, you know, let's take train out. You know, let's pull the train out of the house. Let's pull the train, if you've hidden it under the chair, let's pull the train out. You say it. Or let's put the train in. Or let's put the train on. So lots of opportunities for practice with those prepositions. And certainly if he's trying to say any prepositions already, he's already set it up for you, because those words are meaningful for him. Okay, if you have a child, let's move to a kid that's a little bit more difficult. And so let's say that we have a kid who, again, might only just have that neutral like we talked about at the beginning. Pamela Marshalla and Margaret Fish, which are both speech-language pathologists and both experts with apraxia, talk about how important it is with vowels to begin with that neutral sound or a sound that a child can already say, and then change how that child's mouth moves, so that you've got a new target movement there, and you can start with and then move to the vowels that we already talked about. E, oo, and o. And again, those were our first targets and our first ways to help children develop vowel differentiation. So let's just run through this, and we don't have a ton of time left to talk about vowels here, but I want to make sure that you understand the theory behind this. And so to get an from an the target movement with the you're just starting in that neutral position, but it's real simply just opening your mouth to go from an to an ah. Do you see how that happens there? And so I like to cue that like a doctor does. You know, let's say and playing checkup is a lot of fun, especially when kids have really just gone to the doctor and when they haven't had a lot of unpleasant experiences with that. But other things that you can do here to get an I like to pretend that I'm fake sneezing. So chew. You know, that's kind of a fun thing to do there. Just an you know, like the satisfied exhalation that we do after you take a drink. That's a great way to practice that. Any silly little thing that you can come up with to get the sound there, and then you move it into a word. E is our next vowel sound, so your target movement is smiling with E like that. So you begin with the and then you move to the smile. You may give the little tactile cue with that. Some toddlers are really averse to that, and so you just have to experiment to see how that goes. But anything I eat is my very favorite target word with that. So have lots of snacks there and have a child tell you eat, you know, before he can get that snack. Teeth is a good one for that. I have a lot of luck with kids signing and saying please. And again, I'm not worried about the P or the L on that word with this when vowels are our target. I just want to be sure that I'm getting a good please and getting that E as close to an E as I could get. Now, some therapists really overuse the word or sign for E. Please don't do that. But at this point, the focus practice to fix speech intelligibility or a speech sound error, you really do need lots of repetition. And so don't worry so much about that there. And don't get confused with what your purposes are here. And you would never really use these strategies for a prolonged or repeated experiences with children when they aren't talking. So so the overuse of please is not going to be as big a problem if you are following the recommendations to not work on speech intelligibility until a child is already really, really, really trying to communicate with you. And if you need help with that, go back to show number 374, Guidelines for Determining Developmental Readiness for Articulation Therapy. And you can get those guidelines. And so one of those is that the child is already saying 35 to 50 words. He's already got a well-established spontaneous vocabulary. Okay, next vowel that we are targeting is an oo, like a pucker. Now, my favorite way to practice the sounds is with familiar play sounds that say oo. So I like to, you know, give baby dolls a kiss, you know, oo. And then you've got your puckered lips to give the kiss. Or practice woo woo or choo choo as you're playing with trains. You can scare each other and say boo, which all those words are on that easiest target list that we reviewed at the beginning. The next vowel that we really want to work on is O. So, you know, you begin with the sound and then you just move to open rounded lips. So an O. So any kind of surprise or like, oh no. Great, great little target phrase there, and that's also on your earliest word list. So open is another fantastic word, so functional for kids, and I talked about that in the last show about syllableness. So great, great target word there. But anything that you're going to be surprised with, like, oh, you know, super, super way to get that vowel established for a toddler. You can get some additional cues for this. Another source that I recommend, Pam Marshalla she's not with us anymore, but has a great video on YouTube about vowel cues. So take a look at that, especially if you're a speech pathologist. You'll learn lots of great strategies that you can share with other parents and with other therapists. After you teach that round of vowels, then you'll teach some short vowel sounds, the I and kiss, the e and pet, a as in bat, and book, and ah as in caught, as in book, and then ah as in caught. So look at that, and again, you can get all this information from functional phonology if we have gone too fast for you with these vowels. Let's move on to just a couple of troubleshooting ideas in this introductory course about vowels. And let me talk to you about if those ideas don't work, if you've really worked on this for a while, what could be going wrong and where do you need to back up to? What are some other things you can try? Set the vowel sound before you add the consonants to the word. And as therapists, I talked about this before with that example. Sometimes we overemphasize the consonant when we should really be emphasizing the vowel. So if we are trying to get moo from a kid and get that oo, we should practice or model oo and then back up and say moo. This is really important if a kid is just sticking with using a consonant sound for a word, like he says for moo, okay? Or a kid who just says cuh for cup, we would start with now say cup. And again, that's a great one to do it. And Pam Marshalla calls that setting the vowel. Another thing that you need to do when you've just tried all kinds of words and things aren't working and everything still sounds the same, it still sounds neutral, is just back up and focus on one or two words. So you really just shift your focus to you know, these are just the two little targets that I'm going to work on. I'm just going to ignore all these other errors, and I'm not going to muddy the waters here, and we're not going to make this too complicated. We're just going to pick a couple of words and get those vowels as close as we can in those couple of target words, and then we'll expand. Because sometimes we try to do too much too fast, and kids can't catch up, and then we see no progress at all. So that might be something that you need to do too. The other thing we can do is really practice repetitive vowel sounds in isolation. And so you can do this with a song. I mean, my goodness, the Baby Shark song. Everybody sings that all day, every day with kids. You know, do, 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 the whole thing. Other little songs that you can do, that song, If All of the Raindrops Were Lemon Drops and Gum Drops, Oh, What a Rain It Would Be. Let me just sing it for you. And again, this is weird because the kid's not here, but I'm going to sing it just like I would with a little friend and show you how I do it. And I vary my vowel with that. So every verse, we're singing a different vowel. So here we go. If all of the raindrops were lemon drops and gum drops, oh, what a rain it would be. I'd sit outside with my mouth open wide. If all of the raindrops were lemon drops and gum drops, oh, what a rain it would be. And so you can vary it and sing E next time, and then sing O, and sing OO. And so practice with those little four vowels sounds that we talked about before. So great way to do it. And if you're working with a group of children, that's a fantastic activity to do with a group. Now, we talked about this in the last show, the last couple of shows, with activities for targeting speech sound intelligibility. We always need to make sure when we're working on this with toddlers that it's meaningful and that we give their little bodies a chance to regulate. And instead of running away from us to get that regulation where I need to get up and move, I can't sit down and do this with you anymore, we give them opportunities to do that as a part of our therapy. So every priority pattern that we are talking about in this series of shows in functional phonology, I've given you some activities, moving around activities and sitting down activities, because that approach works best. We're going to let a kid be up and busy, but we just don't want all of that time to be away from us. We need to give a child some activities that he or she can do during all of that running around. So there's some great examples with that. Think about the target words that we talked about, on and off. You can do that with flashlights or with the light switch in the room. You can do anything where you're putting materials in and out. You can play an up-down game with the kid or with all kinds of materials. You can play basketball with a laundry basket or a basketball goal, and certainly target all those kinds of things. So great activities for moving around. And then sitting down, just tons and tons of activities in functional phonology, so that you can get some great ideas and then really match those words from that early first words list and all of the ideas that we've talked about. Really match that with your activity so that it makes sense to a toddler. Why are you saying this word when it doesn't really fit what we're doing? So you want to make sure that all your activities are meaningful there. Okay, those were vowels. Let's move on to initial consonants. This is kind of the bread and butter for speech pathologists. And so as an SLP, this information may not be as pertinent for you because you may already know this and you may have already mastered it. So what I want to try to do in this 20 minutes left in the show, 25 minutes, is really talk to you about how we teach this to parents. Because sometimes, as I've already joked about, what we say and what we do are very different things. And that can be so confusing for parents. So we want to be sure that we are using our information and that we are applying these strategies and implementing these things in a way that parents can carry this over from when you leave their home or they leave your office, so that they are clearer on how they can get the same results that you got with their child. And so this initial consonants are the first sound in the word. We work on this This is our third priority pattern. So we don't address the beginning consonant sounds in a word as a formal therapy goal unless the child has already mastered syllableness, which we talked about back in show number 377, getting the right number of syllables in the word, and then we just talked about vowel sounds. Until those patterns are firmly established, we really shouldn't be overly focused on initial consonant sounds because those patterns come first. Now, does that mean as an SLP that you would never cue the sound or just remind a kid, do a little kind of facilitative cue? You know that he doesn't get his lips together if you're playing bubbles. You know that he's not going to put his lips together for bubble or pop or more or mine or whatever your target words in that activity. So you're saying, oh, look. Ooh, get your lips together. Look, you say it like me. That's not what I'm talking about. We all do that. We should all do that all the time because those are those facilitative cues. And we're not really saying to a child, do it or else, or I'm not going to blow these bubbles until you put your lips together and say bubble. You know, we're not doing that. And that's not what I'm talking about with the focus. The focus is when every single activity that you're doing is really geared toward getting the initial consonant right. And so that would be when a kid is really ready to target intelligibility or articulation. Otherwise, all those other cues are just fine. Those are just fine for what we're doing. It's just little and it's light and it's just a part of therapy rather than when your whole focus for therapy is this. So we don't do the whole focus for therapy is this until we've gotten those other two priority patterns and until kids are developmentally ready. And I've already referred a couple times to show 374 where you really decide that. But let's say a kid is developmentally ready and he has syllableness and his vowels are pretty good, pretty close to accurate. So this is when, and then it's only then, that initial consonants would be your focus for therapy. And so other things that I use here are when children frequently omit or substitute the initial consonant sounds, and when they use less than 6 different consonant sounds at the beginning of a word. So if kids have 6, 7, 8 different consonant sounds in the initial position, you do not need to work on this when they're a toddler or a preschooler. The only exception would be is if their progress has plateaued and you think, I don't know where to start. I've tried. I don't understand what the problem is. Then and only then you might go back and say, let's see how consistent these sounds are. Let me pay attention to initial consonants to be sure that he's carrying this over in all words. You know, he might have a T just in the context of a word or two, and you realize, oh my goodness, he's substituting it when it's not with this particular vowel or these couple of words. So that would be another time that you might really think about that. And remember what we said before about cycles. You know, we cycle through. We will work on a pattern and then we move on to something else for a little bit. And then we're just constantly listening. Is he using vowels? So we worked on that for a few weeks here. And now I've moved on to consonants, but I still want to check on these vowels. Same thing with consonants here. You may work on these initial consonants for a while. And the thing with initial consonants is, as therapists, we already know this, but you have to explain it to parents. You're not going to work on every single sound that's an error until it's perfect, because that's horribly inefficient, and that's a traditional articulation approach. And for kids who are highly unintelligible, you've got a lot of fires to put out. So you can't just, I'm going to stay on this list of initial P until he gets it. No, we've got to really think about sound classes. You would work on, P's, B's, and M's kind of at the same time. And then you don't work on it forever. You just work on it until you feel like, okay, he's getting it. Let me move on to something else. Sometimes with this focus, it's nice to do it for a little while, even as part of a session, and then go back to your language. Or just intersperse these kinds of things that we were talking about, but making sure that you're still working on it, but that it's part of an overall treatment plan. So I wanted to mention that. Okay, let me give you the developmentally appropriate milestone so that you understand what's normal. kids generally produce 3 to 6 different consonant sounds in the initial position by 18 months. So 1.5-year-olds usually have 3 to 6 different initial consonant sounds in words. By 24 months, and again, you're going to be picking from the same list that we've talked about over and over and over now, bilabials, P's, B's, and M's, alveolars, T's, D's, and N's, and then H and W, kind of our other sounds. H is a glottal sound and W is the lip sound, and then our pharyngeal consonants, K's and G's. So kids typically by 24 months have 6 to 8 different consonant sounds there. So if you're working with a 2.5-year-old and he only has 3 or 4 sounds, go ahead and look at getting some additional sounds in his repertoire. And all kids with speech intelligibility problems have issues with consonants. It may not be the initial consonant, but kids with apraxia have difficulty with initial consonants. Kids with phonological disorders have difficulty with initial consonants. Kids with dysarthria have trouble with initial consonants. And certainly kids just with a speech delay may have some trouble there too. So if a kid uses three or four different sounds, less than that, definitely target this goal because you've got to get some other sounds to work with. So let me give you some initial treatment tips. And again, this is specifically designed for therapists to teach parents. You already know as an SLP a lot more than I can tell you in the remaining 15 minutes of the show about intervention for consonant sounds. You already know it. Our purpose here isn't that. It's to teach you how to teach parents and to teach you how to teach other team members, OTs, PTs, your developmental or early development specialists, whatever they call them in your state, the teacher folks, for you to teach them how to do it. So here's how I do it when I am working with a family or a team of therapists and we're talking about this. We've got our early list, and I try to always talk to families about where sounds are made in the mouth, and I always try to get them to start thinking about this. And I've already mentioned this family, but I'm just working with the best set of parents right now. And mom was telling me on Friday that dad is better than her at deciding where something is made in the mouth. And so it's something they've been talking about. You know, he can do this sound, and or he can't do that sound. And that's because it's, you know, he can't do anything back there in the back of his mouth. I don't remember what this specific example was, but I thought it was great that dad was great at it and mom not so great. And mom said he's better at it than me. So talk to parents about that. And if you get the luxury of seeing mom and dad, and I'm in a special situation, so I probably get that more than I ever have in my career. But really talk to parents about that and have them understand, you know, talk to them about, you know, even ask some questions. You know, let's say, okay, let's think about P's and B's. Where are those made in the mouth? You know, and mom will sit there and, you know, think about where that's made and say, doesn't it make sense that we would work on words that all start with that sound so that that's just a real good focus for us? And we're not just going to work on a P. Let's think about all the words that we can think of that he would need to say with a P, B, or M. And you may be saying, look, he's already got a couple of great words that start with M. So let's come up with some other P's and B words because those are made right here with the mouth. Or let's add a W to that because, you know, he has a really good ooh sound. So let's get a W right there because he can already make that sound pretty well with his lips. So those are the kinds of things that you talk to parents about. And if a kid has a good middle of the mouth sound, so if he already says no or da-da, you can say, you know, another sound that goes with that is a T. The only difference between a T sound and a D sound is your voice. Your voice is off with a T, but it's on with a D. And so you're teaching parents this really basic, you know, phonology or speech therapy, Artic 101. So you're walking them through this process and really getting them to think, you know, oh yeah, that would be a good word to work on because he already has this sound. And listen, moms get so good at this, and they're so instinctively drawn to wanting to work at the most efficient level that they can, because more than the therapist would ever want a child to get better, that mom and dad want that child to get better even more than you do. And so giving them just a little bit of information like that can sometimes make a big difference. And don't think this is too technical. I don't want to overwhelm them. And certainly if a parent is worried about basic needs and medical issues, you certainly don't want to overwhelm them with something that's too technical. But lots of parents are ready for this kind of stuff. So give them the information. Talk about it. You know, say, I heard a k today, so that means we can work on words that start with K and G. Doesn't that make sense to you? And just really enlist them, and not only with encouraging them, but really giving them specific things to think about. So, other therapists too, your developmental interventionist colleagues who are working on the same team, they didn't get this information in school. And don't feel territorial about it. Like, well, I can't give up my job as a speech therapist, or there's no need for me on the team. Don't do that, because sharing information is something that we should all be doing. And think about it just in terms of, okay, for this one kid, I'm not just teaching this other therapist this information for this one kid. She's going to take that information and then be able to make all these kids that she's currently seeing, and then all the kids and all the families that she sees for the next year, for the next 5 years, for the next 10 years. So when you think about paying that forward, when you think about sharing your knowledge like that, it makes it a lot easier, and you're less likely to be petty or get into those little kind of power struggle things. So here's what we do with this information. We look at the consonant sounds that a child can already use in a word or two, and then we think, what are some other target words that we can get this in? And one thing that I like to do is then just take a basic vocabulary list. And I've got one at Teach Me to Talk. You can just go to teachmetotalk.com and search vocabulary list, and that post with that PDF should pop right up in the search bar. And then, so then you look and you get some additional ideas. So some more vocabulary that you could teach a child. So look at the consonant sounds he already has, and then think, or what are some other words that we could pull in here? And sometimes looking at a list, especially for a parent, and especially if you're a therapist who can't always sit there and think on the spot, and I'll admit, I used to be a lot better at it than I am now. I really need the list a lot of days. And so look at that list and pair. Here would be a good target for me, because this child can already say this. All right, that's that. Don't forget about your cueing strategies here, and go back and listen to show 376 with our verbal, visual, and tactile cues. And so be sure that we are targeting words, again, using that kind of continuum. We do whole word models first, and sometimes as speech language pathologists, we want to isolate the sound, and we go straight to isolation when so many toddlers can get it in a word if you just model it in that word several times. And you may, again, model it in isolation for yourself, but you're still cueing the word. That makes a lot of sense to me, because we want to go from least amount of assistance to greatest amount of assistance. And pulling a sound in isolation is a lot, it's just a lot pickier, a lot more technical than modeling the sound in the word. And your goal isn't correct production in isolation, is it? Your goal is correct production in a word. So you want to quickly move those sounds into words. And again, go back and listen to that continuum with verbal cues, visual cues, and tactile cues, and help a child move through that so that he can say it. And remember, again, you can do the things like giving the sound a name, all those heavier cueing strategies, but you don't want to do that. And the tactile cues, every time a kid can't get a bilabial, I know you just want to reach up and grab his little lips, right? But don't do that unless you absolutely have to. So think about that hierarchy of cues, so that a kid, you're really modeling it, and you're giving the verbal cues, look at me, watch me. And you might bring out the mirror, you might do some things like that to get the sound, but get it into words just as quickly as you can. Now, in show number 376, I went through the whole list of developmentally appropriate sounds. So we started with bilabials, and I gave you some strategies for getting those sounds. If you can't get it, here are some other ideas to try. I don't want to repeat myself in this show. Go back and listen to that show. But let me just give you some additional keywords for bilabials. And again, this will be on your handout. And like I said, back in the vowel section, it may be worth it to you, even if you don't need the CE credit, to pay the $5 and get the handout. And that's just how our system is set up. So I want you to know that you have access to this if you can't scribble all this down. But the easiest words for bilabials, and remember why it's easy, because we're taking the target sound, which would be your initial consonant here, and then we pair it with a vowel that's made at the same place in the mouth. So front vowels. So for P, potty words, P, papa, pawpaw, people, pal, pie, pop, and peep. For B, it would be B, boo, bow, bye, boy, and beep. And then for M, it would be me, mama, moo, and my. So does that mean you'll never work on one of these other words? Absolutely not. I mean, I cannot imagine working on an initial bilabial without pairing the word more or the sign more to try to get that word and try to even elicit a correct M. And I can hardly even say the word more in adult conversation without wanting to sign it. So you will deviate, but just know that these are the best words because you're more likely to get the correct production of your target, which is the correct bilabial, so the correct P, B, or M. For W, another lip sound here, your target words, we, like you're wee swinging, we, if a kid is advanced enough to use that pronoun, the kids that I've worked with hardly are. That's a later developing pronoun, but just kind of know that it's there. Way, I like that when I'm modeling. No way, no way. That's a good one. Whoa is a good one. As you, whoa meaning stop, or whoa, like you're surprised. Wall, wipe is a word that I work on a lot. Wham and worm. And again, from a functional perspective, I work on the word wash, but it's not as easy theoretically for a kid to get there as those other words would be. So think about what activities you can do with that. Let me give you your target words that are easiest to get the initial T, D, or N correctly. Toe, two, T, ten, turn, and tie. And tea might be the letter T or the drink T if a family happens to drink a lot of tea. For D's, we have do, and again, day, duh, da-da, doe, doll, done, and dot. That Baby Shark song is the good there for the do, 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 do. And then N's, no, knee, nay, new, now, none, night, net, and nine. So even these words, you know, I really tried when I wrote Functional Phonology and looked at lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of different sources from this to pull vocabulary that was relevant for young children. And so even looking at this, not every kid is ready to say the word new. That may not be a concept that they're ready for yet. But you, or net. Net may be a word that they don't use. But if you live in a basketball crazy state like I do, net would be a good target word because kids talk about basketball. We all talk about basketball all the time. So just use your own judgment on that and try to, it's a great way to teach new vocabulary when you're doing, it's a great way to teach new vocabulary, but we should always make sure that these words are meaningful. So if a kid doesn't know what a net is, you need to show him a net, and not just a picture, in real life, and give him a context for that. So that he, and we've talked about that a lot, and how important that is for the words to be meaningful. All right, so those were our alveolar sounds, and then the remaining sounds for our initial consonants that we would target would be K's and G's. And those are our pharyngeal or our throaty consonants. So K, and a lot of kids will eliminate O when they're trying to say OK and just say K there. Key and cow. And for G, go, goo, guy, and gong. I don't ever use the word gong, but I know a lot of therapists do, and I saw it in so many resources when I was writing this book that I thought I better just go ahead and do it, because it may not be a word that I use all the time, but other therapists may use that. And then H, this last glottal sound, target words here for H. He, like you're laughing. Ha, ho, ho. I use it a lot at Christmas time for Santa. And then the best ones, though, are hey and hi. So good target words for all of those initial consonant sounds. So I hope that that's some new information for you. Let me skip on now to just talk about what do you do when you've used all your strategies and, you know, you're trying to get the sound in isolation, you get it in isolation, still can't really consistently get it in words. What should you do? Let me give you these troubleshooting tips. Double down, like we said before, on just one or two target words and try to pick something that the kid can do and pick something that the kid can use, and then just practice, and see if you can get that word a lot more consistent. And so you just make your target word list smaller. And the other thing that we can do is auditory bombardment. And so I talked about this on the previous show with syllableness and explained what that is. There's so much good research for having a child listen to words as a parent says them. Now, do by do, and just not try to repeat them. You're just helping them internalize the pattern that they are missing. I do not do this for every child. And again, for me, this is on my troubleshooting list. This is on my list of what I try when nothing else has worked. So for, and I know that that's different from Dr. Hodson's approach and other very reputable SLPs who might do this with everybody. But because I focus on toddlers, I don't do it maybe like I would if I saw preschoolers exclusively, or certainly with school age kids. But we do need to have some things that we do when, again, kind of a hierarchy, when nothing else is working. So a listening list from Hodson and Padden is a good thing to try when a pattern just is hard to get it established. And so the theory here is you might do it with amplification, meaning that the parent's voice is amplified. And certainly if you are so committed to a phonological processes approach, you probably are already doing this without me even talking about it. But sometimes that amplification piece, where you are using, you know, even a little toy microphone or some other kind of, an ear. We used to do a lot of headphones and things. We don't do that kind of thing anymore as much. But hearing the pattern louder with the listening list really does make a bit of a difference with kids who really, really, really are having difficulty getting some success with the pattern. And so I have some listening lists in functional phonology, and you can certainly Google listening lists or auditory bombardment or anything like that. If you're a parent, you're wanting to read more about that, or if you think, gosh, that might be something that I'm willing to try here. So you can get that information, and you are just having the child listen, and he's not supposed to try to repeat it. Your only purpose is having him hear the pattern that you're targeting over and over and over. And let me say, even for these listening lists for initial consonants with functional phonology, I did not give a list for every initial sound. I mixed up the sounds, because our only goal here is to have a kid include the sound at the beginning of the word. And so for me, with a toddler, sometimes a substitution is all I'm going to get. I can't really get the sound, especially if it's an older, later developing consonant sound. And so I just want it marked. I want some sound in there. You know, we want to correct as many substitutions as we can, but for lots of these kids who are highly unintelligible, just not having omissions or deletions, just getting some sound in there. And especially if the sound is too hard, if there's an S or a consonant blend or cluster at the beginning, you're not going to get that. You need it marked. So for that reason and that reason alone, you may do a lot of word lists just so that a kid understands, I need a sound. I need a consonant sound at the beginning of that word. All right. That's it for this show. We reviewed the second and the third priority pattern for targeting better speech intelligibility in toddlers. And really, remember, we're focused on kids with highly unintelligible speech. Some level of errors are perfectly acceptable for toddlers because they're not supposed to talk like adults yet. They're still really, really young, still 1, 2, and 3. So keep that in mind, especially if you're a parent and worried about that with your own child. And if you want the specific intelligibility milestones, go back and listen to show number 373 and get yourself some more background information on that, because that might help you feel better about it. Or it could light a fire under you and you think, I got to get on this. This is important. So that's what information is supposed to do for all of us, is help us make better decisions. Okay, that's really it for today. Thank you so much for joining me. If you're a therapist, you can get information about getting continuing education credit for this course listed there below. If you're watching on YouTube or if you are listening to the podcast, go to my website at teachmetotalk.com. This was show number 378, and you can get the information there to get your CE credit for only $5. You know, what a deal. That's all. That's really all. Thanks so much. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech therapist, and thank you for watching teachmetotalk.com's podcast.
Thank you.